Hi. It's great to see everyone. Happy New Year. And it's terrific to have so many people here. And we're going to do a very special report that goes in tandem with the preview that I put out there, kind of laying out the main message. And this is all about the Tom DeLonge New York Times release from December 16th. And boy, this thing has crumbled pretty fast in less than 2 weeks. So pretty amazing. I have a special guest with us today, which is Gigi Young. Gigi, it's great to see you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And Gigi, you've been doing all kinds of interesting work around this. I read a post of yours where you were talking about disclosure and how there's going to be a lot of false starts with disclosure. So I'm very interested in that. We're going to explore that today, along with this kind of nuts and bolts, breakdown of what's going on inside that team. But I am very interested in that because I know that you look at these things from kind of an interesting perspective because you try to live with that reality of this other intelligence. And that's really important, I think, when we look at this. We're going to have to come in from a few different angles to understand anything and to not be just completely, kind of taken over by the CIA narrative, which is on the march. And that's what we're going to get into. But I think that that Facebook post was particularly good, and I hope we can get into some of that today too. It has to be. So happy New Year, everyone. 2018 is going to be very exciting, and it started off with a bang. The research that I've been getting around the op that's been happening is really mind-blowing because it doesn't surprise me so much, but the boldness of the move so close to the end of the year to see if they could make this stuff happen is very impressive to me because it's not something that we usually see. The CIA in particular doesn't usually show their hand so much. By now, we know that this is entirely a CIA operation, and if you don't, then by the end of this broadcast, you will, because there's no question in my mind. I don't mind telling you, this is 100% CIA. Right down to the New York Times article and beyond. So let's start off with this. The article came out and it claimed that this Luis Elizondo was a disgruntled ex-intelligence guy who just came along and decided to out everything and started talking to Tom DeLonge in October and resigned. And we have all of these things that happened in the meantime. DeLonge himself started the Academy to the Stars. They did a strange rollout for it in October, where they really stressed that, you can invest in going to the stars, and we're going to hire Lockheed Martin. Remember that name as we go along in this, because it's going to come up in a very significant fashion. So one thing I think is important for us to review is what got DeLonge into this game. And how did DeLonge wind up being the face of UFO disclosure on the marketing intel side? And I want to reiterate this principle too, which is whenever we do this work, we're coming in between incredible marketing ops on one side that are there to make money. And they are designed to harvest the cash out of these different communities, which are the New Age communities. I did a series called The New Age Deep State earlier this year that followed the same type of trend. Now we're looking at something which is very unusual, which is they see, these marketing people, that the UFO term is one of the most used terms in search history. They know the popularity of the term, they know the culture is rising up to it. And they've been keeping a lot of these UFO secrets for about 75 years. On the government side. So they've maintained psychological operations to keep the public dumbed down about what we're dealing with. Some of this was expected because after World War II, it was a bizarre things were going on for some of the people in charge. So people like Truman, who were in charge of the original groups that handled the UFO file, changed the paradigm. They developed the secrecy wall, which wasn't there really before. I mean, if you go before World War II, you've got financial secrets. You don't have that gigantic military machine. Really, the military machine is what spawned all this. Basically, if you look at the U.S. Army in 1939, getting into the war, we didn't have anything. I mean, it was probably the most pathetic army on the planet. And, you know, we put it together. We had a gigantic industrial engine and we put all that together. But when you come out of the war and you've dropped the atomic bomb, you're in a totally different reality. So when we get into this UFO file, when we get into the UFO aspect, when you get into the sightings in 47, you're dealing with a different consciousness. And you're dealing with a security problem of the first rate. So they can't come out and say UFOs are here, you know, get the public on their side. They have to treat it in this very sensitive way. They've just defeated a major enemy. They now have a new enemy, which is the Soviet Union. So we're looking at a very powerful situation and motivation for secrecy. And we know with the development of the National Security Act, the CIA themselves was created, and the wall of secrecy and the secret system of finance was developed. Now, it's very important when we get into that to understand that the reality that they're dealing with, although we can understand it, there are groups that would take advantage of it. And this is the situation that we find ourselves in, which is the CIA taking the lead. Now, there have been a lot of UFO researchers out there talking about this and saying that, well, you know, the CIA doesn't really have a lot to do with telling what the president what to do, and they follow his orders and all this kind of thing. And I've been really surprised hearing this rhetoric. I've been finding that this is really a situation quite the opposite. You know, that everyone should be aware that the CIA is not your friend. And let's go into just a quick overview of why the CIA is not our friend. First of all, the CIA's their job was to provide intelligence on matters relating to global security to the president, so he would have the kind of information that he needed. Instead, what grew up was something that became what we call the deep state now, where all these connections to Wall Street and all these connections to big oil and all these connections to foreign governments formed something quite different than what the CIA was invented for. And there was actually a split in the branches of CIA and something called the Office of Policy Coordination. This is important because the Office of Policy Coordination were the guys who would get on the ground and help overthrow elections. And the CIA were more intelligence gatherers. They were more like the original mandate. But the OPC got out of hand at a certain point, and they were running their own operations. And so Truman said, stop those guys. And they sent the CIA in to get OPC back under the umbrella. And what happened over time, and this is according to the analysis of people like Peter Dale Scott, the UC Berkeley professor who coined the term the deep state, that group, OPC, took over the CIA. So that covert wing became the dominant power. And they actually had the ability to blackmail the government in certain ways. So we started to get this covert-overt situation. We have this public government on top that is dealing with the situation. And then you have this other government operating and setting up secret foundations. And then Truman, who set up a lot of these secret foundations, started to realize, oh, these guys are getting out of hand, can't do anything about it. By the time he leaves, boom, we're out of there. You know, the CIA has already taken control. So they pass it on to Eisenhower. Eisenhower is dealing with a lot, but when he comes in, the UFO file is very important to him. He is somebody who, from a military standpoint, understands its significance. He knows all about the Foo Fighters. He's been through World War II, et cetera. So this is very important for us to understand the context. By the time that Ike has his stroke in the late 50s and Nixon takes over briefly, this is pointed to by researchers as a period when the UFO file got taken out of the circulation in the domain of the presidency. And we did have a whistleblower come forward and say that Ike at one point threatened the CIA and said, look, I'm going to send an army unit in there if you don't give me that briefing that you're stalling. And they continued to stall him. And he said, if you don't have it by noon, you're getting the army. So the CIA gave him the briefing. But this is the kind of tussle that was going on when you get into Kennedy getting into office. When Kennedy gets into office, he's dealing with this huge sprawling secrecy bureaucracy. And he tries to get a handle on it. They didn't expect him to get in the first place. And as a result, what we start to see is the tension between the CIA and the presidency. So if you run into these reports that say the CIA is okay and they do what the president tells them to, There's been a tension between, for any serious researcher, between the intelligence wing and the presidency, because he's a temporary official and they get to stick around very often unless he reassigns them. And you'll find there's a few cases in history where the president did reassign the CIA director for hiding information from him about UFOs. And Kennedy is certainly one of these cases where the struggle is public. So at a certain point, he slips to Arthur Schlesinger, I'm going to take the CIA and shatter it into a million pieces and scatter it to the wind. That gets picked up in the New York Times. And so they're very aware of what he plans to do, which is he's going to pull them back into their original mandate. Now, there's a lot of background information about the UFO file. I did a Vice HBO special about this very thing, and you can pick it up on this channel. But the thing is, instead of going into all that history, what I'm going to do is just give you the bottom line, which is JFK getting close to the UFO file, those forces inside the aerospace industries working with the CIA, really putting up a wall of secrecy against that. So we get out of that situation. Kennedy gets assassinated. Johnson gets in, and Johnson and Nixon pretty much maintain the kind of CIA secrecy wall. Nixon gets into a tussle with Jesse Helms, and Richard Helms, who's the CIA director. Nixon fires him in 73. Later, Carter gets in, and he has George H.W. Bush as his CIA director. When Carter gets in, Carter has a great interest in UFOs. And this is very important because Carter asks for the Freedom of Information Act request to be boosted up and accessible and made easy for all. This is where we get all the research from the 80s and 90s, because those FOIA requests became easy to get. Without Carter, you didn't get that. Carter had seen a UFO. He'd reported a UFO as the governor of Georgia. So we have someone who's very interested in the topic. This is a guy who we also know has gone after the presidency to talk to people about this issue. And he even talked to Stanton Friedman. So great interest in the UFO file. He asked Bush, who's the CIA director when he gets in, to give him that information. That is, share with me the high threat cases. Let me see what you've got. And Bush said, you don't have a need to know that. So Carter fires him. Now, you can see right there that people who say the CIA do what the president says, it doesn't work. They have intelligence to maintain. They give the president what they think he needs to know. They're operating ostensibly at the behest of the president, but it doesn't work out that way in real life. So we have all these committees in the 70s exposing that the CIA has been around the world, they've been overthrowing governments and all the rest. So we go through this period into the 1980s, and we've got Bush, the former CIA director, as the vice president, and we have Reagan as the president. So Reagan gets these reports about these gigantic disks flying around in space. And this is all very well detailed. It's not somebody's conspiracy theory. That's on the record. And he starts to get nervous about this. And during one of the summit meetings with Gorbachev, this just came out from Gorbachev at a press club event, he says, you know what? If we get into an alien invasion, will you back us up? Will you fight with us? You know, and join our team and defend us against an alien threat. And Gorbachev is freaked out. Well, he says he's freaked out. I mean, of course, the Soviet Union knew a great deal about the UFO thing, but Gorbachev said that Reagan was dead serious. And Gorbachev said, of course we will. And Reagan said, we'll help you too. So they're creating Star Wars on one hand, saying that they're going to zap missiles from outer space, and that way everyone on Earth will be protected. But this move into space and the weaponization of space and the secrecy moving into space is very significant. And you'll find all of the players that we're talking about now, from Pandolfi to all these other players, they're all in this 80s, 90s mix. So if you want to understand who are on the team of the Tom DeLonge people, when we're talking about Hal Puthoff, when we're talking about Ron Pandolfi, these are the times that they come out of. This is the national security situation. This is the CIA secrecy wall that they've been living behind. We're looking now, we're going to disclosure periods, which are the 90s. And before I go any further with that, I want to mention something here, which is, Gigi, when you were talking about disclosure and you're talking about how people see it as so important to get this answer, but they're looking for an answer from a government. I found this interesting that you said, you know, this is not really something you can get from the government.
Yeah, no, I think that the reason why we want disclosure is we're really trying to access this part of ourself. And I don't think that we can actually really understand disclosure or extraterrestrial life or technology until we realize that ETs are synonymous with consciousness. And that is one of the reasons why it's so protected, is because that when we start to connect with our consciousness, which basically can translate into our human potential, we society changes. So there is so many more deeper layers that are going on here. When we're looking for disclosure, we're really looking for this internal process of disclosure. And for that can involve meditation, that can involve a kind of a reunification with your soul. It's what's missing in the world. It's what's missing in society. And so that's really what we're craving and what we want. And it's also why there's so much weird drama as what you're saying. And the president's like, "Oh, hey, can I have those files?" And they're like, "Yeah, no." Because it's so important. And I think we really have to understand, and I know we're going to get a little bit into the occult significance later, but we really have to understand what's going on here and how. And I think if we can start to associate consciousness with this, we can begin to, I think it begins to sober up a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. And it's funny that you say that because, of course, John Mack, who was one of the best researchers and the Harvard professor who risked his career to get into this field and really find out what was going on. This was his solution. He was saying this is very consciousness related, and that this was the conclusion he was coming to at the end of his life, before he died. And he had done very complete research on the phenomena physically and also in people's lives with the abduction phenomena, et cetera. Now, so I just want to check in with everybody out there and say hello. And what we're going to do with questions is Olivia over there, and say hello,
Hi,
Olivia.
guys.
She's going to take questions for us at the end of the broadcast. We're going to run 90 minutes, okay? So there'll be plenty of time, and we'll do questions at the end. So if you have your really good questions, save them, and then I'll announce this QA period, and Olivia will dish them out for Gigi and I. That's very important. One thing I want to ask you for is, can you bring me the iPhone, which is in there? Because it has something I saved there. So now I want to get into the team, which is the DeLong team. When we're looking, hey, that's great. Thank you so much. When we're looking at DeLong's team, it was weird as it developed because the first thing I want you to know about this whole DeLong operation, which has a marketing, significant marketing side, but it also has now the CIA psychological operations side with the help of the mainstream media and select politicians like the great Harry Reid, from Senator from Nevada, who was the former Senate Majority Leader, incredible power position there. Just ask Mitch McConnell or LBJ was Senate Majority Leader. I mean, that's where all the deals are made. And Harry Reid is particularly interesting. Because he is the senator from Nevada, and Nevada is where Area 51 is. So the senator from Nevada has to have a working relationship of Area 51 and how that coordinates with his activities as Senate Majority Leader. So in other words, secrecy is his middle name, and you have to keep that in mind. So when we introduce these players, Harry Reid, George Knapp, who's an outstanding UFO journalist, one of the best, and somebody I watched in my teens, and really kind of got me involved in the idea of doing journalism around these things. So incredible respect for George Knapp. However, George Knapp, Harry Reid, and Robert Bigelow with Tom DeLonge, I'm going to show how this combination of people, and Bigelow, of course, being the billionaire president of Bigelow Aerospace. And remember, aerospace, if you've been watching any of my reports, very hardcore secrecy around aerospace agencies. They have a tendency to lobby Congress, to have senators in the palm of their hand. They're incredibly powerful groups, and their power needs to be stepped back because groups like Lockheed Martin, Bigelow, Aerospace, SpaceX, all of these are coming up and just wielding tremendous amounts of power. Hughes, all of these that we've gone through, just incredible political power. And you'll see a lot of these players popping up over and over again around these aerospace companies? Well, there's a good reason for that. And we're going to get into it. Okay, so let's start with this. Harry Reid, some out of the blue, becomes the face of disclosure during this rollout that Tom DeLonge comes along and says, we're going to reveal all these things. And dude, you won't believe the incredible stuff they've been showing me. I've had to do like, you know, eye tests to get into security areas and eye scans, and they have so much cool stuff and all the rest of it. So, you know, obviously we see the trip that he's on. He's playing secret agent man, and he's a retired, you know, kind of like he's got the rock star thing going on. So he gets into this, but I want to say this about DeLonge. DeLonge, before this UFO op came along, a year before, check in, his PR company contacted me. And they had a whole different thing going on. It had nothing to do with UFOs. It was, Tom's writing a book about the paranormal. He's got scientist A, scientist B, scientist C on his side. He can't tell you who they are. They're very special. He hired a New York Times bestseller to co-write the book with him. He starts giving these interviews. I'm doing this paranormal book. People will understand the paranormal. It will change the paradigm, all the rest of it. Exactly the same language as he came back later with in the UFO. Nobody that I ever talked to about this even is aware that this exists. It's well documented, and it's easy to verify, in other words. So it's not going to be something you have to take my word for it. It's there. And there are actually interviews with him in Newsweek and other magazines where he's talking about this weird venture about the paranormal. This is very significant because the marketing operation had to get legs first. It had to start out with these things. And DeLonge has long-standing relationships with people. For example, George Knapp, who is the journalist, TV newsman there in Las Vegas and does Coast to Coast. And as I said, we have tremendous respect for him around UFOs because he broke the Area 51 story with Bob Lazar. So they floated this idea out there later that he had kind of, you know, stumbled upon George Knapp and they got together and did this and boom, here we are. But Knapp has known DeLonge for years. And so this idea that, you know, that this just suddenly came about is wrong. Harry Reid and Knapp go back to Area 51 disclosures. They're very good friends. They've been friends for 30 years. So let's get some of these relationships clear, if we get the picture clear. Bigelow and Knapp are very good friends. The Defense Intelligence Agency has gone to Knapp on certain stories because they know he's so deep on the inside with the UFO part. And they said to him, look, we'll let you be a fly on the wall for certain types of things. You just can't talk about it. So this is how tight those relationships are. So the question becomes, you know, when you have somebody who's a journalist, a trusted journalist in the UFO field, and they're close friends with DeLonge and they're close friends with Bigelow, and they're close friends with Harry Reid, that's a lot of money and a lot of political power to say to a guy, look, here's what's actually going on, and to have him go along with your story. So instead of doing that kind of hard-nosed, critical thinking reporting that you would expect from somebody as great as Knapp, we see he's kind of on the promoting side of this operation, which is how it starts to fly through the community. We start seeing, well, hey, Tom DeLonge is going to expose UFOs and all the rest of it. The next person that they acquired in this fashion to help them promote this second operation, which is the first one was this paranormal thing, which flopped entirely and never got off the ground. So DeLonge comes back with Secret Machines and he starts to come in through Coast to Coast and other media outlets. And so Leslie Kane now becomes the next one that they pick up for this operation. Now, when I say this again, Leslie Kane wrote one of the best UFO books on the planet. You know, and it's her credentials are unimpeachable in that. And I enjoy her work and I'd love to have her on the show. We've talked before. But she came out in the New York Times, you know, fronting for this operation, which is what I call the Bigelow Reid DeLonge operation. Another outstanding journalist who suddenly is working with this group and saying, yeah, this is where UFO disclosure is at. It's kind of a perilous situation when you get into that when you're in this field, because the UFO field, I think, as researchers, when I've seen them and talked to them, I mean, they don't do very well. It's not like it's a big money job. It's not a big influence job. So I think it is easy when you come in with a marketing op, like the Tom DeLonge operation, and you're coming in on the other side with political power and the CIA, I think it is easy to sway some of these people around. Now, here's an interesting thing about a lot of the UFO researchers. I get a lot of my own opinions about the CIA from them. So that's when I started to dig into it, because they were saying, well, the CIA is lying about this, the Pentagon covered up that, et cetera. So I do feel like, in a sense, that they've been picked off and made to move this operation forward. Now, the operation, I'm going to say, people have been calling it, you know, disclosure day one, disclosure day two. No way. This is a 2-week window that they've released it in. And in this 2-week window, I've seen incredible collapse of the original storyline. And I'm going to point it out in detail. But I want to take an interesting left turn here and talk about just a few of the dates that are floating around with this. And Gigi pointed one of them out to me, very strange. In one of the specials, I pointed out that the word slave kept showing up on the sidebar of the Navy cam. Now, I have, you know, I've worked for financial publications, I've worked for tech publications. I understand that roles can be assigned technologically that are like master slave and all the rest of it. So don't worry about that. But what I think is important is everywhere that thing was beamed all over the planet with the help of the mainstream media, we had slave this, slave that, slave, slave, slave. Really caught me as funny, because in my own research on the CIA, I've seen them do all sorts of things with terms. And it's like they're laying a foundation in your subconscious. And that's what I felt was going on here. But Gigi, you found out something very interesting about the date that it was released. And I thought this is a good time to bring that in.
Yeah, I really did. Anytime this kind of stuff goes on, if you just pay attention to what you see, you're not going to get the full story. You do have to go into the occult. And you do have to go into the esoteric. And that's why so many people start out researching this kind of stuff, the CIA or the government, and they end up finding themselves with surrounded by books about ancestors and ritual magic and things like that, is because they find out that these things happen on certain dates. And so you mentioned the slave in the screen. I believe it's in the right-hand side of the screen. And so it actually turns out that the releasing of this footage corresponds directly with a festival called Saturnalia. And I think some of your viewers may know this. It happened in Rome, and it was a celebration of the god Saturn, which is a very restrictive, you know, if you know astrology, it's a very restrictive god. And so what they would do during this period, and it's a period of about 7 days, is they would have these ceremonies and orgies and go crazy, but it would all be around freeing themselves of their masters or emancipation. It was an emancipation ritual. And so this directly clearly correlates with the word slave and slavery and the slave on the side of the video. And quite honestly, even if that is a term that you can put on a video for your fighter pilot, if that's like a term, or if that appears to have a significance, it doesn't negate the fact that they still did that on that day, because there's a strong ritualistic component where it will have to appear in order to channel energy into a certain location, to a certain area. So it would be very convenient to do that and very easy to do that. So it was all around Saturn, and it was all around the emancipation. And I'm like, that's really weird. That's really weird. It's in that exact time. Well, it's not weird, but it's weird that it's in that exact time period. And then I went a little bit further, and I started to Google this period more, this December 18th solstice period. You can also bring in the solstice as well, which for even people who are not practicing understand the power of the solstice, which this announcement was on. Started to go back a little bit more and see, like, okay, what else happened here? Well, I found out, I'm a Canadian, so I'm not so familiar with American history, but the emancipation of slaves in America was on December 18th, mm-hmm. which was the exact window where this was all being done. So this is a Saturnian ritual. There is a Saturnian undertone that I cannot look away from. And so that was the weird kind of slight. Oh, and I actually found another thing that I didn't tell you about.
Yeah.
I was thinking, actually, Steven Spielberg was also born on December 18th.
Oh, yeah.
And we all know that Steven Spielberg is famous for E.T. and the Ark of the Covenant, which is also highly occult. And a lot of people will see the Saturnian kind of undertones in there as well. So that was the slave symbology that we found.
It is fascinating. And this is that window, this period of time. And, you know, December 16th, December 18th, or the 20th or the 21st was the solstice.
Yep.
That whole period. You referencing the CIA occult part, I think, is very important because, of course, it forms the foundation of many of the beliefs of the really core members, as it did in Nazi Germany. Now, what's interesting, even beyond this, is the deep, deep occult levels go into the space program, like the JPL aspects. And you and I were talking about this commercial that came out a couple of years ago now, which was the Pepsi commercial. And this was a Pepsi commercial about disclosure. And this was so unusual. And Fitz said to me, you know, Catherine Fitz, when we first saw it, we were both on the phone with each other. And we were like, what on earth are they doing? Because it was all about Tesla discovering the Black Knight satellite and these, you know, Sumerian gods coming back in UFOs. And oddly enough, date was significant too, because it was November 17th that they first aired it. And then November 17th was also the date. This is why I asked for the phone earlier, because I was looking at this article, which was the follow-up article to the original article. And it was by one of the authors. I'm going to read this to you real briefly, because there's also a real bombshell in here that nobody has really, I don't even understand how people haven't picked up on this, because I mean, it has been the holidays, but I am starting to think that in particular around the UFO aspect and the UFO researchers, there's a little bit of a strange euphoria going on because they're finally being recognized or whatever. And it's problematic because they're losing a lot of the critical on the ground skills. If you, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. I find this very interesting. Okay, it's Ralph Blumenthal who has done good work in the past. He's the co-author with Leslie Kane. I'm going to read this real briefly. There's two things in it. One, the meeting that took place with Elizondo and Kane and all of these people, they identify this in here as happening on this date. So I'm just going to read it. This is short, too. It's a very short follow-up and very unusual. And there's one very glaring thing, bombshell, in here. I'm going to point it out. Here we go. Ralph Blumenthal, December 18th, 2017, New York Times. Our readers are plenty interested in unidentified flying objects. We know that from the huge response to our front page Saturday article, a Sunday article, published online just after noon on Saturday. By the way, it did not make the front page of the printed version. It made the front page of the web version. Interesting. Revealing a secret Pentagon program to investigate UFOs. The piece by the Pentagon correspondent Helene Cooper, Pentagon correspondent, author Leslie Kane, and myself, Ralph Blumenthal, a contributor to the Times after a 45-year staff career, has dominated the most emailed and most viewed lists since. I've been noticing this too, as a lot of the people involved in this are like, look, man, we got 3 million hits, you know. I mean, that's cool and everything, but, you know, let's keep our feet on the ground. So how does a story on UFOs get into the New York Times? Not easily, and only after a great deal of vetting, I assure you. Okay, this is still Blumenthal in his short article follow-up to his New York Times article. The journey began 2.5 months ago with a tip to Leslie, who has long reported on UFOs and published a 2010 New York Times bestseller, UFOs, Generals, Pilots, and Government Officials Go on the Record. That's an excellent book. At a confidential meeting October 4th in a Pentagon City hotel with several present and former intelligence officials, read CIA officials, and a defense contractor. This is the missing piece, because the defense contractor is highly significant. Who the defense contractor is, it's not mentioned here, and it's not mentioned in the main article. So my feeling, first of all, just for starters, is Lockheed Martin is the defense contractor, and that's based on all of the data that I've assembled around this. The other key person in here, bringing forward Elizondo is the defense contractor. You know, so if they want to come forward and tell us who the defense contractor is, that would be very significant. My guess, Lockheed Martin. And it's very important, too, because as we look for chains of command about Elizondo, even Stanton Friedman, who was looking at the story, was like, who gave Elizondo the go-ahead? Who gave Elizondo the go-ahead to talk? Who gave Elizondo the go-ahead to release the video, et cetera, et cetera? And as I'll show you, Elizondo's original story crumbles under even minute analysis. But let's save that, and I'll read the rest of the article. Okay, so back to this meeting at Pentagon City Hotel with several present and former intelligence officials and a defense contractor. She met Luis Elizondo, the director of a Pentagon program she'd never heard of, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. The two terms that are important there are aerospace and threat. Aerospace companies and threat. They stand to gain a great deal from a threat. By the way, I don't think that was the name of the program at all. And I think the FOIA documents are going to show that. When they look for this program, I don't think they're going to find it under that title. And I'm going to explain why. She learned it was a secret effort funded at the initiative of the then Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, starting in 2007 to investigate aerial threats, including what the military preferred to call unidentified aerial phenomena or just objects. This was big news because the United States military had announced as far back as 1969 that UFOs were not worth studying. Leslie also learned that Elizondo had just resigned to protest what he characterized as excessive secrecy and internal opposition. The reason for the meeting. Now, the program, Elizondo says, ended in 2012. So in protest would mean I'm in this program, you know, and they end it in 2012, and I hang around for 5 years, and then I launch a protest out of the blue. And by the way, even if I want to launch a protest, if I'm a CIA official and you've got a secret program, I can't come out and launch a protest against it. I've sworn an oath to secrecy. Somebody is telling me, go out and do this. Because it has to be an operation. Anyone in intelligence that you would talk to, I've spoken to people about this inside and out. It's 20 years to start with about secrecy. You can't just walk out and start spouting the CIA's secrets or the Pentagon's secrets. It doesn't work that way. You can't, you know, so they've created this narrative about a New York Times vibe, this whole thing. You've got Luis Elizondo. He's disgruntled. He's a defense guy. You know, he's a counterintelligence agent. He happened to get upset at the secrecy level. Now, none of that rings true as we read along. But anyway, this is the story that they're putting out. But, you know, we have to see the little breadcrumbs that they're giving us. All right. So the program, by the way, ended in 2012. So keep that in mind. She learned it was a secret effort funded at the initiative of then Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, starting in 2007, to investigate aerial threats, including what the military preferred to call unidentified aerial phenomena or just objects. This was big news because the United States military had announced as far back as 1969 that UFOs were not worth studying. That's Project Blue Book they're referring to. We had the Robertson panel. We had extensive studies around UFOs. As a matter of fact, there are clips of Gerald Ford, Harry Truman, talking about UFOs and saying, yes, they're there, but they don't pose any threat, basically. So we've had people in high-level positions talk about UFOs before. That's nothing new. Leslie also learned that Mr. Elizondo had just resigned to protest what he characterized as excessive secrecy and internal opposition, the reason for the meeting. Okay, so we know, we'll just throw that out, because Elizondo didn't protest 5 years later. Doesn't work that way. She spent hours with him reviewing the unclassified documents for the $22 million program operated largely in the white, that is not under special restricted access, but hidden in the huge defense budget with only parts of it classified. So this is where they get away with doing two things, saying, well, it was secret, not secret. So I can talk about it, can't talk about it. And it's a very confusing thing. This is not normal protocol. And for a newspaper of the New York Times, they know they deal with secrecy all the time. For them to go along with something like this, it starts to look absurd immediately. So, hidden in the huge defense budget with only parts of it declassified, a few days later, Mr. Elizondo and others there, including Harold Puthoff, an engineer who's conducted research on extrasensory perception for the CIA, huge in the remote viewing programs. Anyone who knows the alternative arena knows hell put off. So he later worked as a contractor on the program. Christopher Mellon, former deputy assistant secretary of defense for intelligence, announced they were joining a new commercial venture to the stars, Academy of Arts and Science, to raise money for research into UFOs. Leslie wrote it up for the Huffington Post with scant details of the program. I'd known Leslie for years, this is Blumenthal continuing, and she told me this looked like a story for the Times. I agreed. Leslie and I met with Mr. Elizondo in Philadelphia on October 31st. Okay, that's Halloween, right? There's one of your dates, JJ. 3 days later, I emailed the executive editor, Dean Baquette, about a sensational and highly confidential time-sensitive story that I said involves a senior U.S. intelligence official who abruptly quit last month. There's that fake line again. Okay, him quitting abruptly in protest is the fake out. Doesn't happen that way 5 years later. Plus, he's CIA. He can't decide, oh, I'm upset. I'm going to spill secrets. Doesn't work that way. Instant, court martial. You're done. Okay. I said it involves a senior U.S. intelligence official who abruptly quit last month exposing a deeply secret program. Now it's deeply secret. A few lines ago, he was saying, well, it's not really secret. It's sort of sprinkled in the defense budget and on all the rest of it. And actually, it's a white program. It's not even a black project program. So everywhere I go in this article, it's contradiction after contradiction, which I find interesting because I notice that I think what's going on is they're writing the articles and then they're getting changed by the editors, which is a process that happens at the Times, and I'll explain that. I'm going to get through the end of this article. There's only a couple paragraphs left, but it's important that we get all this on record because it's going to really expose the whole thing. He alerted Mac Mazzetti, the investigations editor in the Washington Bureau. Leslie and I briefed him in New York on November 7th. We assured him there were no anonymous sources. Everyone was on the record. So presumably that means the defense contractor also is on the record. So let's have them on the record. Lockheed Martin. Let's see. After discussions in Washington and New York, Helene joined our team, the Washington Bureau Chief, Elizabeth Bumelar. She would be our editor. On November 17th, we three, there's the date. Now, that's the date, other tie-in date with the Pepsi commercial, which I think is interesting because it was a disclosure commercial. It's 2 years later. We three met Mr. Elizondo in a nondescript Washington hotel room where he kept his back to the wall, keeping an eye on the door. Okay. So here's the script element, right? He's nervous that they're going to take him out because he's got the secrets, right? He's watching the door and they met him and he has these secrets. And also he resigned in protest, remember? Okay. Carl Hollis, the Times chief Washington correspondent, was well acquainted with Mr. Reed and helped arrange for an interview with Helene. She flew to Las Vegas December 5th, met with the former senator who confirmed the program, saying, I got this going. There is more to this. Leslie interviewed the aerospace magnate Robert Bigelow, who also confirmed his participation. Okay, I think we can leave the rest of that off. What did we learn here? It's very interesting. One, they're trying to say, look, here's how it all happened. Okay, so the first element they used is they had a disgruntled ex-employee. We know that that doesn't make any sense. The other part that they used was the defense contractor. It hasn't been identified yet. That's very significant because the person that he's answering to who could have been in possession of the footage and gave it to him is the defense contractor. So that has to be explored immediately. That has to be the people involved. Leslie Kane has to say, here's the defense contractor I was working with. Identify the source on that one. I think it would be very significant. The next thing that's important, and this is a little bit touchy because I respect the people involved who are doing this, but we have to get to the point on this. Because I have information about the DeLong operation. DeLong, as we know, when he was writing Secret Machines, approached different writers, and he approached Peter Lavenda to get on board. He also hired different New York Times writers, best-selling writers, and they would write the book, and he put his name on it. But Joseph Farrell was approached by Tom DeLong, and he's gone on the record about this. I'm not betraying any secrets, but they offered him a great deal of money to come on board. And Farrell said, well, the stuff that you're researching is interesting, but here are the types of things I would need. Like, I need the sources of what you're talking about. They also discovered that Farrell was not so keen on Hillary Clinton. And as a result, all of those negotiations fell apart. But I did get a few figures out of those, kind of range of figures, let's say, for the kind of money that these guys are throwing around. Now, Grant Cameron was talking about the organization Free, which is the Edgar Mitchell Foundation. And they have been, doing incredible work around ETs and free energy and all the rest of it. The idea is that after he died, they changed the name, and they have a reputation as very, they attract the best people to work with them on very sensitive subjects, like the UFO subject, for example. So they went, DeLong had a conference call with them that just came out, and the people there are talking about it and saying, you know what? He was throwing around a lot of money. We couldn't do it because he was saying anything you discover has to be under my umbrella. And this is important too, because I've been noticing as we get further and further into this operation that the CIA is running through the New York Times with the help of these defense contractors that have to do with aerospace. We're seeing people deep in the UFO field change their tune on things. For example, Knapp, when he was in conversation recently with Linda Bolton Howe, who's a friend of mine, and I love her program, and she's a great friend with Knapp, and I've talked to Knapp before. I have great respect for him, but when she mentioned Area 51 and Bob Lazar and how they were keeping ET materials there, which is the whole basis of the Bob Lazar story, suddenly Knapp said, well, I don't know if it was ET or not, which I find really fascinating. Leslie Kane, they pull her before CNN, and she's talking, explaining the whole thing. And the CNN host gives her the perfect opportunity, and he says, well, Leslie, are we talking about aliens here? And she says, no, we're just talking about aerial phenomena that needs to be researched. Well, Leslie, in your books, your partner was Bud Hopkins, who is the king of the UFO abduction scenario. You know all about aliens. So are you saying that there's nobody operating the craft that we're talking about? So why are you both suddenly retreating from this and keeping the same line about how we need to investigate aerial phenomena and not mentioning aliens? So what I don't like is seeing UFO researchers operate under talking points. Now, who's giving them the talking points? This is very significant. When we get into it, we start to see that if these journalists who are really good on the UFO side, like Leslie Kane, if we sell the money that has been thrown around on the DeLong side, like I said, with Free and with Farrell, it's documented. They offer a lot of money. Come on board. You have to keep your information secret with us. And listen, there's no law that says they can't do that. And there's no law that says they can't hire people like Kane or Knapp. But journalistic integrity on the subject is a whole different matter. So if Leslie Kane or George Knapp are in any way have any contractual relationships with Robert Bigelow, Harry Reid, or Tom DeLong, then the things that they put out need to be prefaced by, for full disclosure, I have a contract with Robert Bigelow, I have a contract with Tom DeLong for consulting services, whatever it happens to be. And if I was Tom DeLong, I'd hire those guys too if I was interested in it. They're the best. But we need to know that, because what's happening is a CIA operation is slipping through this entire field. And suddenly we're looking around, and the CIA is making a documentary that's coming out this year about UFOs. Tom DeLong's making a documentary. Well, he's going to have Richard Dolan on it. Well, how is Richard Dolan going to have to mouth off against Tom DeLong if he finds things wrong there, if he's part of his program? You see, so we have to be able to separate these things. And these are the good people. I mean, I'm talking about the best in the field, but we have a real problem there, because there's a way to do it. Because I'll tell you another thing. The way that they raised money around this project, it's very easy to make that money anonymous. So the money that they raise, if the CIA is helping them with that money, and then they're turning around and paying UFO researchers, what's happening is the CIA is paying UFO researchers to cover up the entire thing and go along with their weird version of disclosure that they're going to use as an aerial threat program to drive up defense budgets and make aerospace the biggest thing ever. So it's a very dangerous situation. And the only way to clarify it is to bring forward real rules and real ethics around it. The way to do it would say, very simply, when you are a UFO researcher around this, or actually in any capacity, do you have a contractual relationship when you're discussing this article with Bigelow, with Tom DeLonge, with Academy to the Stars, or have you ever, or will you in the future? Simple. You know, I could say right now I have no relationship with them, none, except that they've thrown their PR stuff at me before. And I had a debate on Vice Motherboard podcast about a year ago with Tom DeLonge. That's about it. So I think it is quite significant, and it is something that will help with the transparency around this. It will stall the intelligence CIA rush into this field, which is what we're seeing. And I think when we look at it that way, you know, it's not only me that can see the traces of these operating marketing ops and the CIA ops coming into this field, but I think it is really a coordinated program. What do you think, Gigi?
I completely agree. I think full disclosure, I think if you are working for these individuals, these companies, you should have to disclose that. Things rot in the dark corners, basically. And that's where things can get really distorted. And I do feel like this whole field, whether it be in the New Age or whether it be in ufology, I feel like it's kind of like the Wild West, mm-hmm. where it's so fringe and it's so weird that there's no structure and people don't really know how to, if they have the right to ask, or they don't, it's sort of just so weird that people don't know how to do it. But what we have to do is we have to create that structure, and we have to ask questions and be critical. And that's the only way we're going to get the best information. It's just how it is. We have to create that structure. Because I have a lot of questions about Tom DeLonge before I heard your spiel, and it's not looking good.
Not looking good. No, absolutely. It is fascinating though, and you make a great point, which is it's almost expected that when you're dealing with kind of super sensible subjects, let's call them, whether it's remote viewing or whether it's UFOs, it's almost like anything goes. And, you know, there is that aspect that I think kind of is taken advantage of over and over again. Now, I've exposed marketing ops around this. The intel ops are the slipperiest of all, because what happens is I think that some of the people involved, the good researchers, say, oh, for once, they're going to give us some good info, and I'll pal around with this guy, and he'll give it to me. Okay, now here's a news flash on Tom DeLonge's story. You ready? Here's a couple of things. First of all, number one, the Pentagon, as of right now, is saying that they didn't release, that this is the Department of Defense, and I put the article in the last episode. They're saying that they did not release the video. I'm going to call it the slave video for short. So if they didn't release it, then Elizondo had it. How did Elizondo get it? Remember, Elizondo's boss in the entire chain, now I'm saying in the full chain of his activities in the period he was active in, his boss would have been CIA Director John Brennan. John Brennan was known as the Drone King. And he, because of his high use of drone warfare, high civilian casualties, that's a CIA drone program, you know. You go into Afghanistan and you kill 60 people at a wedding to get one guy. So this is the nature of the CIA leadership at the time when Elizondo was there, protesting wildly, apparently, for 5 years about their secrecy, but waiting until Tom DeLonge rolled out Academy to the Stars and to actually resign his job and come forward. So all that is definitely a CIA hangout. I have no patience for that storyline. I think it's completely ridiculous. But who are these people? So first of all, the Pentagon is denying that they did it. They're also denying the story. They're saying, oh, well, you know, certain aspects of this that were brought in, the way they were brought out is fake now, or confused is what they didn't use the word fake. That's my word. They said confused. That's a quote, though. Here's something fascinating. Ron Pandolfi, one of the biggest forces behind this entire DeLonge operation, known by people who've been studying it deeply as the actual ringmaster of the public, of the DeLong Academy to the Stars push. He, by the way, is the top CIA scientist. You can only imagine what a CIA scientist knows. Let's think about this for a minute. We get regular scientists, right? This guy's a CIA scientist and their top guy. Pandolfi has been involved in very interesting and unusual activities. He's been involved in the UFO field, you know, working around the UFO community. He's been involved in some of those extrasensory perception studies that have been done. He also was very involved in the Hughes scandal of when we were sending satellite technology to China as a way for Bill Clinton to get extra funding going on. So the whole, you know, Clinton comes into this over and over again, and we have to keep our eye on the ball politically about who we're dealing with. Because remember, the WikiLeaks emails that came out showed that it was John Podesta who was working with DeLong to try to get this UFO off the ground. They were thinking Clinton's coming in, and this will be a great time at the end of her first year of her first term to talk about an alien threat. And she can grandstand about it. You know, there were all these WikiLeaks things where she was complaining to Podesta, hey, look, I went on this show. They didn't ask me about UFOs. I spent all this time studying. I'm even using this new term, UAP. What happened? So why was Hillary so interested in talking about UFOs? It's very fascinating. But before we go there, let me further destroy the original New York Times story. Ron Pandolfi, the main man behind DeLong, is now saying that the New York Times is a phony. Let's let that sink in for a moment. This is just happening. Pandolfi is saying that it's basically some kind of Scientology fantasy cooked up by Hal Puthoff, who's a member of this team, as we know. So there's inter-warfare going on in that group about this story, because the New York Times spin, the New York Times Harry Reid spin, was put out quick, in my opinion. It was put out and thought through as a response to DeLong fumbling Academy to the Stars rollout, one, disastrous performance on Joe Rogan, two. I don't say it to be mean. I think it was a disastrous performance. You'd say it, you know, the guy didn't look like he knew anything about UFOs. And afterwards, Joe Rogan just, you know, he was like, I try to be polite, but I felt like, you know, I was talking with somebody who was completely out of it. Which is true if you watch it. So it's, you know, it's not a matter of being mean to DeLong. It's not supposed to look like that. Remember, DeLong is a pawn in the whole thing based on his interest and the fact that he's a big shot. You know, that he kind of went from this kind of rock stardom and he's walking around saying, oh, dude, I can find out about UFOs and you won't believe the stuff that I'm finding out. And dude, isn't it awesome? So this is supposed to be, you know, kind of the face of the thing, you know, because it looks better than Harry Reid coming out. Well, guess what? By the time DeLong really was rolling this stuff out, it was looking bad. I think they were getting ready to pull the whole thing. And then they came up with the idea, well, look, Reid authorized this kind of $22 million thing over 5 years. By the way, that's only a few million dollars a year. That's not a black budget money program at all. It's the secret, not secret thing. But it is interesting that all that money got funneled to Harry Reid contributor, Robert Bigelow. So if I'm donating money to Harry Reid's campaign, I guess I can hang around and get a weird $22 million contract to study UFOs. Let's look at another key piece in the article, which completely falls apart. And I mean, there's nothing holding this part open. In the article, they state that there's a building in Las Vegas that Bigelow owns where they're housing UFO materials and studying these materials. And it came up that, you know, in one of these Fox, it was pretty good too, because Elizondo is very slippery and he knows how to get around a lot of things. You know, they ask him questions and he says, we weren't interested in who was piloting it. We were interested in what it was and where it came from, you know, and this kind of thing. So like, oh, but you don't care who's in there piloting it. That doesn't make any sense. So he's very kind of clever with the way that he puts things. But with this, you know, she was like, well, you know, I'm looking at the situation with you and I'm not really understanding where we get these materials from. I mean, did a UFO crash and did we pick up the metals and house them? And he said, well, there's a number of ways, anomalous ways, that we can get these materials, you know, like if something flies through a cloud, it leaves a trail. So basically you're capturing cloud trail metals and giving it to this guy to study in Las Vegas. And by the way, we have Area 51 in Las Vegas, so why would they be storing it at Bigelow's Ranch or whatever? It doesn't make any sense. And the materials story, the New York Times let that through, okay? This is obviously the biggest fairy tale, because if you have UFO materials, then you present them to a scientific body, and that's the end of it, you know? Hey, look, they look at it, and we've had these analysts come out and say, yeah, they could tell if it's from space. Sure, they could. So that's it. Then they say, okay, these vehicles are from space. Disclosure, we're done, right? So that part doesn't make any sense. Little by little, we hear these little tantalizing things as if we're waiting for the next Netflix release. It's like, coming up in season two, the metals in Bigelow's secret bunker, you know, and like, make sure you get season three. This is not UFO research. It does not live up to the level of seriousness of national security issues. And it very much appears to be an op gone wrong. Pandolfi, main man inside the DeLong camp, the man behind it, according to many people, behind the push for Academy to the Stars, not behind the article, clashing with one of the main figures Hal Puthoff and saying that he was creating a Scientologist fantasy with this New York Times article. That means Pandolfi is saying that Keane is a liar. And he's calling into question, you know, the entire New York Times editorial capability of tracking down a story. Let me tell you, I've worked in those mainstream media circles. It doesn't work like that. If you can't say, if you're the New York Times, we have UFO materials in a building when Bigelow has them. Because Bigelow can sue you. So can the government. So something very strange is going on between these people, and I think we need to watch it very closely, because that part of the op is falling apart. But Gigi, one of the things I want to ask you with all this information, and I know it's a lot to take in, and when I've been working on it, this has not been a quiet holiday week for me at all, let me tell you. I've been getting incredible information. But when you see all these things going on, you're somebody who really, you know, understands the disclosure aspect from a number of different angles. How does this rollout feel to you, let's say, since October in Academy to the Stars?
It feels like a mess to me.
Yeah, right.
It feels like a desperate mess.
A desperate
mess. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like a desperate mess. I think that there's infighting going on, as you mentioned, which is why it's so strange. I find it weird that they use Tom DeLong, because it suggests that they're after a certain demographic, a certain generation. It's clunky. It's clearly to control a narrative. I think that they, if they were smart, I think they would have started doing this years ago. And I think they've been putting it off.
Yes.
Because I feel like that consciousness issue that we keep coming back to, it's kind of like looking at the sun. You can't really look at it. And so I feel like they've avoided this. Ufology and even the cosmic fringe in the New Age has been growing. Mm-hmm. People are asking questions. Like you said, it's the number one or a huge Google term. And I think they've been watching it. Like, or we have to do some kind of disclosure, we have to do this, we have to get control of this, but I think that they've been struggling to figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do it? Because there's this ufology element, which is talking about secret space program and all that, but then there's also this New Age moment where there's people who channel ETs and have information about technology. I mean, there's lots of channelers who have really good information on technology. The Royal Society, for example, was used in Nazi Germany to channel technology. You were just talking about getting like cloud metals. Well,
right.
They use channelers to get information on ET technology and metaphysical information, because the ET tech actually starts to go into consciousness and metaphysics. And so I think that they're really having a difficult time. How do I merge? How do we get control of this narrative? How do we get control of this narrative that's deeply spiritual? That's deeply spiritual, that is, there's elements of control and weird stuff going on with the government as well, and with secrets, like just all this. It's such a strange, garbly narrative, and I think that they've been struggling with how to get a hold of it. And I think that's what we're looking at. We're looking at that game where you're trying to hit what is it, whack-a-mole?
Whack-a-mole. Yeah, right.
We're really looking at that. We're looking at someone who's trying to hit all the gophers in one go of it. And that's why we see all this stuff in the New Age scene. Like, we see these people rolling into the New Age trying to talk about ETs. And then we see the government element as well. They're trying to get a hold of it.
Yes.
And I think they're struggling. And I think that that's what we're looking at. That would be my opinion.
You know, it's fascinating you put it that way, because as I understand it, the documentary that the CIA is putting out, and by the way, we know that they, you know, already consult for programs like Homeland and all the rest of it. So it's just going to be CIA TV pretty soon. So we've got the UFO documentary, and it's supposedly about this portal. This portal is so important because it's about being able to jump into this portal and, you know, teleport or something. I mean, I don't know all the details about it, but it sounds to me like they're creeping into the area you're talking about, which is they're going into this kind of more cosmic consciousness aspect. Because remember, when you see guys like our friend Hal Puthoff, who's done all this work around remote viewing and stuff, you're getting deep into the psychic side of it anyway.
All roads lead to not Rome, but consciousness and psychic phenomena and human potential.
Well, and you did Rome earlier, so we know what's going on.
We did do Rome earlier.
I'm going to read just for people who say, hey, look, this is not a CIA operation. You know, what are you talking about? It's Tom DeLonge. This is great. It's disclosure. Can't you handle it? I just want to read the backgrounds of the people on the actual team of Academy to the Stars. And I'll do this quickly, but I think it's important. Ron Pandolfi, we talked about him, top scientist, CIA. Been involved in everything from Chinese missile satellite technology to psychic studies to UFO studies for the CIA. A very interesting, extremely interesting guy, and I find it fascinating that he's blowing Hal Puthoff out of the water as we speak. By the way, just to show how much of a clash is going on, Pandolfi's spokesman says, yes, he did say that. He said that, you know, basically Puthoff punked the New York Times. But I don't believe that. Now, he's Pandolfi's spokesman, okay? So now you have Pandolfi at odds with his spokesman and Puthoff. I mean, that's just the beginning, folks. All right, Luis Elizondo is next. Counterintelligence. Okay, psychological warfare. This is what I'm good at. Basically, in order to get into a position like that, I have to be one of the best liars with one of the best fantasy imaginations possible. E. Howard Hunt, CIA super spy, right, wrote over 30 incredible books, science fiction tales, hero tales, all the rest of it. The reason he was such a top CIA propaganda guy is because he was the one who had this great imagination. Jesus Angleton, the same thing. They grabbed Angleton. Angleton was like an art student, you know, he had a great imagination. So we have to remember who we're dealing with. They need the imagination part here, and they have it in Elizondo. Reported to the director of national intelligence, that was James Clapper during the last administration, and did counterintelligence CIA work for Latin America and the Middle East. Okay, two of the most troubled regions, one region dealing with drugs, the other with terrorism. I mean, they need to come up with really hardcore stuff. And, you know, they do it well. That's what counterintelligence is all about. You bring that into UFOs and you make people like us deal with it. Well, they sit down and they think, let's think about this. Disgruntled counterintelligence guy comes out and says, I can't bear it anymore. I need to resign and tell the world the truth. And hey, by the way, over here is this kind of crazy rock star guy, and he wants the truth. And they put them together, and the New York Times comes along and says, we're going to be number one on this. You know, so that's a pretty good counterintel operation, in my opinion. And I've studied this stuff pretty closely. Harry Reid, former Senate Majority Leader. One of the things that I think he's very, you know, somebody, when they talk about him and transparency, and, you know, as soon as they switched the op to him, they came out with tweets that said, the truth is out there, okay? And this is Harry Reid writing, the truth is out there. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. Now, Reid is the guy who blocked the audit of the Federal Reserve, not once, not twice, not three times, four times, five times, six times. This is not somebody who wants transparency. Let's deal with that for starters. Second, when there were these lawsuits by the workers at Area 51, this is not somebody who stood up and said, you know what, these people deserve to be recognized even over the secrecy. No, he went for the secrecy. The people who had inhaled chemicals and had court cases and stuff, against Area 51 and the things got thrown out because the government wouldn't acknowledge the base. Harry Reid just let that stuff happen. Harry Reid is the ultimate insider on the Democratic side and a very corrupt politician. I have no qualms about saying that. I think the record shows. Especially if you're looking for transparency, you don't go to the Area 51 guy. Also, this is somebody who came out of the Gaming Commission, okay, before he became a senator. So he has to be beholden to all of the people in order for them to elevate him on the gaming side. And listen, Las Vegas is a tough town. So, you know, I'm not saying that you can be basically, you know, kind of Clark Kent and get the job done there. But still, this is, you know, you can't say that Harry Reid is going to be the good face for disclosure. It's ridiculous. My opinion, they're just using him because of the desperation after DeLong stumbled in public. Next, Jim Semivan, CIA officer retired. His main expertise in his own resume is domestic surveillance. This is fascinating because the CIA, technically, in its own platform, is not supposed to. That's the FBI's job. The CIA is not supposed to maintain surveillance on American citizens. It actually is against the law. So this is pretty interesting. 25 years, okay, retired. Hal Putoff. Well, we all know Hal Putoff. He's been associated with all kinds of interesting programs, psychic spies program and all the rest of it. We know that he's at odds now with Pandolfi. Apparently, Putoff was in favor of this New York Times off. Pandolfi thought, as soon as somebody goes even one inch deeper, the whole thing will explode, and he's probably right. Very interesting side note to this. WikiLeaks, Julian Assange comes out and rails against this New York Times article, and he says, great, a Scientologist fairy tale teller. And he's calling Putoff a Scientology guy. It seems like there's the weird weakness in Putoff's makeup for these people to go after is the Scientology thing. But I find it very interesting. Both WikiLeaks and Pandolfi use that language. And we know, of course, Putoff is connected with Scientology. I wouldn't say that I know that he's a Scientologist, but they understand this connection. And maybe this is Scientology working in some of these channels, trying to get that whole thing in there because they have their whole weird space thing about clearing and all the rest of it. So maybe somebody inside there is objecting to that. I'm not going to speculate too much. Chris Mellon, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intel, Clinton and Bush, okay? Hardcore and Mellon, by the way, of the Mellon family. Mellon family want to do the research, one of the most powerful financial families in America. Paul Rapp, Office of R&D. Okay, they call it ORD. Some very interesting facts about this. He got an accommodation from the CIA. Okay, this is how well they thought of him. He did extraordinary work. But guess what the ORD is famous for? That's where they had the MKUltra program. So it's psychological warfare again, and this guy's getting a commendation for running that office. All right, so these are hardcore, top-of-the-line operators, psychological warfare operators, Elizondo, Rapp, Norm Kahn, Dr. Kahn, over 30 years at CIA. What's his bag? Counter bioweapons program. Okay, so he's all about chemical warfare. Everywhere you go in this list, these people have very strange capabilities, psychological warfare, biological warfare. What is this team? Why are they being pushed in with this UFO operation? What kind of expertise do they have that would make them good for this operation? It's the absolute important question to answer now. They need to answer it on their side, not spin. We need to understand what's going on. Doesn't look like a lot of these guys are going to be on there by the time we get to ask them the question. Next up, General McCaslin, advisor, okay? McCaslin now has quit. He's out of there. He had some very interesting research going on, but he quit advising the situation, and I believe it was due to the article. The timing seems just too pronounced. He realized he's gone completely quiet on the whole thing. He was the only general. Remember this, and when I did the initial podcast with Vice, was last year. I think it was May 2016, so it was actually, now it's 2 years ago because we're in 2018. And one of the things that came up was that DeLong was saying, I have five-star generals who are going to come out with me and do this. And, you know, we heard a lot of this type of talk around different people who were saying, like, you know, Obama is going to come shoulder to shoulder with an ET out and do disclosure, right? And it made great headlines for some people. It's the stupidest, most ridiculous thing I could have ever heard. That was never going to happen, but they did, you know, all kinds of promos around it. Well, this was DeLong's version. These five-star generals are going to come out with me and announce disclosure, right? And so the only actual general he ever produced, unless, you know, besides all these CIA guys who descended on the scene, instead of producing five-star generals, he produced really, really deep operators in CIA. I mean, black operators. So the only general that I could think of that's associated with his operation, unless someone can correct me, is McCaslin. And now he's gone. He quit. Final thing on this, which is Ted Stevens, Daniel Inouye, and Harry Reid were supposedly the initial group that funded the weird AATIP response program for aerospace threats. They, Inouye, was connected with COG. And Inouye was also, you know, he's the only person who's ever said in the Senate anything regarding COG, and it was during the Oliver North hearings. North came forward and said, hey, I'm going to talk about my role in setting up continuity of government and using the emergency doomsday channels. And Inouye stood up in the Senate and said, you can't do that. We'll do it in closed session because you can't mention COG. Inouye is also famous for saying, had quotes on the record about secret government and things like that. It's a very unusual player. He died. Okay. Ted Stevens died in a plane crash 2010, basically a couple of years after the program. I guess it's just dumb luck. Harry Reid's the only one left alive on that. But when you look at that list of people, Gigi, and you know, you're somebody who looks at this disclosure thing and really, you know, thinks it can be achieved in your lifetime, you know, that something like this would come forward, that we'd have a greater understanding about other intelligences. You know, I know that you're not looking for it from the government, neither am I. But when you see this group of people huddled around an issue like disclosure, how does it make you feel?
I find it scary. I mean, to be really honest, I find it scary. I find it scary and disturbing that people who are correlated with programs like MKUltra and PSYOPs are controlling something so important. I feel like consciousness is an incredibly important issue. And I find it disturbing that these characters who are basically trained to manipulate agendas are controlling it. And I think that we have to temper our desperation for knowledge and even connection and really look at this. And we can't brush aside the fact that this is what they're involved in. I mean, the drone master, I don't want this person anywhere near anything. I mean, this is not something that I would consider being connected to any type of evolved ET intelligence, I can tell you that.
Yes.
If there is connections going on here, it's certainly not things that you would want to be tethering your consciousness into anyway. Disclosure and ET connection is an individual process. I say this a lot, but it is. And it's all within us. And so I find it incredibly disturbing that these characters are involved and that they're getting so much press.
Yeah, I know. That is the disturbing part when the mainstream media gets involved and they have such a great relationship with the CIA and they're like, hey, the CIA is here to save us from the alien menace. How about that?
Yeah, the alien menace, or it's the alien messiah on one hand, but for heaven's sake, don't say what it really is. You know, these are distractions. But when you starve a population of information about who we are, this is what happens. It's like clamoring, and we have to be centered, and we have to, I think there's going to be several wonky disclosure attempts. This is the beginning and I think we have to keep that in mind. This is the beginning. And we're going to see it in the new age, because the new age is very much infiltrated. And we're going to see it also with these things, these narratives rolling out that you're talking about, using cool, shiny people, to try to give it credibility.
Do you, my question for you when I think about these things is, because I'm always surprised by the different ideas that you come up with. And that's what I think about you. You're such a spontaneous thinker that you go into different areas that I would never think of that. How would we use something like this to our advantage on the side of people looking for genuine information about UFOs? How could we use their UFO op for greater knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not going to hurt you to pay attention to it, but to just look at it very, very critical, because there's always going to be little tidbits of truth in there. And look for those things to resonate or to be repeated in front of you. Don't attach onto anything. Don't get attached to movements right now. Like you were saying, like next week, we're going to do this and that. Don't look at it as a movement or a story or a simulation to stimulate us thinking that we're having disclosure when we're really completely externalizing it and avoiding it. So throughout all of this, there's going to be truths that are revealed. There's going to be truths that are revealed that were secret. It's going to be done in a messy way, and we may have to sieve through, you know, pan through the slop to find the gold nuggets. But I think that we can use it, and I think it can teach everybody critical thought as well. It's not a bad word to think critically. It adds depth. So I think we can learn discernment and critical thought and get deeper from this. And I think a real better community can actually be formed from it. But we do have to look at the shadow, the collective shadow, which is what we're talking about now. We do have to look at that.
Yes, absolutely. You made me think of it, though. It's Game of Drones, starring Luis Elizondo as the disgruntled ex-CIA man who came forward with the truth.
Yeah, no, I mean, as you're reading out the things that these people are involved in, it's scary to me. That's very scary to me, because ETs and all this kind of consciousness are intertwined. Are these the people that you want to be getting information from? Are these the kind of morally sound people that you want to be getting info? No, I don't.
Right. Right. Absolutely. It's crucial, because a lot of people make this too, like we're supposed to lust after this technology or whatever. You know, the thing that we need is the consciousness to be able to use higher technology.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the funny thing, that if you start looking into this, you find out that this really, you know, exotic technology is all interconnected with, you know, brainwaves and consciousness. And so that really, really is the next step. You really got to refine that. And I actually think that this whole disclosure thing will actually help us refine our consciousness, actually. And I think it's kind of like that thing where you get a kick in the pants and you're forced to grow up. Like, I think that that's kind of like, it's kind of like an initiation in itself. Really, yeah. It's kind of an initiation, this whole weird disclosure thing that's going on. It is a kind of initiation, maybe an initiation by fire or by weird, I don't know. But it's something.
It is. I absolutely agree with you. And I think that it represents a great opportunity for us, you know, when we're looking at the UFO research side of it, because we've had that UFO research. It's part of the modern consciousness, and it's been shut down. We know that after 9/11, they put the clamp down on it, because if you get into the late 90s, you were looking at things like the Phoenix Lights. You know, there were a number of different interesting studies around UFOs. They had popular shows everywhere like The X-Files. It was a period where they were preparing the public for it, and then 9/11 came, boom. Now, here's one thing that I want an answer for, which I went round and round in my head for, and I could not figure it out. I'm going to throw it at you. Suddenly, after people reported Greys and reported Pleiadians, and they've reported, you know, all kinds of different reptilians and things like that, when it comes specifically the Greys, so I think the Greys are the ones that we were dealing with in these abduction scenarios. And it seemed like everyone sort of knew that type the best. When they're talking about, you know, when Elizondo comes out, he can only talk about the craft. He can't talk about who's in there. And when they give these talking points to people like Leslie Kane and Knapp, apparently they can't mention ET anymore. It's part of the thing. They can't talk about the actual aliens anymore because they just talk about the threat and the technology. They must have figured something out there, but what is it?
Yeah, and even as this is going on, I know that Neil deGrasse Tyson also came forward and was like really putting that emphasis on the technology. And
yeah.
No FEED CT. So they're still trying to create this distance because I think it actually hints at humanity, a different type of humanity, a different type of consciousness. And I think that that's naturally for human beings. I think that's very exciting.
Yes.
I think it gives us a different way of thinking. And I really think that they're going to try to delay that and control that and white knuckle that until they, it's the same thing. They should have gone into this a long time ago if they were capable of it, but they're not. They're going to try to delay the spiritual component. These are other beings or something in the craft as long as they possibly can, because they don't want that aspect of our consciousness to be stimulated. I also find it interesting the craft that they did show in that footage.
Mm-hmm.
That's typically, you know, I mean, a lot of the times if you do see a real craft, there isn't an element of consciousness that's activated within you. A lot of people who have genuine experiences with ETs or seeing crafts, there is sometimes a heart connection or a telepathic connection. And so I think by them not talking about that, they're trying to keep that those types of experiences, whether it be personal or just through them announcing things, at bay. I think it's an attempt to just continuously control this narrative.
Wow, that's an excellent point. You start to look at a UFO video, your consciousness starts to raise, basically. You start connecting with it.
It does. And if you are not so good, it's going to hit you on the higher consciousness, and it's not going to be very conscious until even months or years later. But if you're pretty, if you are a meditator and if you're aware and interested, you can get it right away.
Right.
You know, you can get you can get it right away. So they know that. They know the power of consciousness, and they know that consciousness is associated with these things, and they want to keep that at bay, because once consciousness starts to wake up on this planet, then they really don't have the control that they do. And do you want someone coming into your bank account and taking your money away or taking your power away? No, you don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain established powerhouses that are not interested in losing what they have or even facing any type of retribution for what they've done or created. So of course they're going to keep this at bay. Just makes sense to me.
Absolutely. It's a great point, actually. And it's also, you know, the kind of thing where they're very comfortable. If anything, from what I understand, when people look at it deeply, people like Farrell, people like Fitz, they say that these people are looking for the next eighth. You know, they're looking for that next thing that they can get a little more margin on. So if it happens to be the ET thing, well, they think to themselves, if we create a threat, an alien threat, and we throw this program out there and they start creating divisions in the government to look into it, and eventually it's like we need to guard against it. We need a new SDI Star Wars to blast them out if they're there. That's a lot of money. And but here's a flip over of that, and I want to ask you what you think of this. A number of years ago, a guy named Stan Fulham came out, very unusual, made a prediction that it had a big impact on me because I was working at a tech magazine at the time. And for some reason, he sent it to me. But it was a press release that predicted that there was going to be a sighting over New York City. And in fact, it was the month later it was going to happen. It was October 13th, 2010 was the date that he predicted. Now, he was an ex-NORAD officer, lived in Canada, and he was a very nice guy and fascinating, absolutely genuine. So October 13th, 2010 rolls around, and I'm watching reports of this strange daylight sighting over New York City. And that footage, it just so happened that CBS News was setting up to do a morning shoot, basically. They were up to something. And they had their camera, you know, in this position looking at the sky, and it got incredible footage, some of the best footage, of these silver spherical craft just hanging around in the daylight sky, just like Fulham had predicted this summer previous. So I found this interesting, and I looked into it. Long story short, I got in touch with the source of the prediction, because Fulham actually died just a month or so later. And he was a guy in his 80s, I guess people could say. You know, to me, the timing struck me as weird, but anyway. One of the things that the source of the prediction said was that our environment was so damaged that there were going to be UFO alien groups that were going to be appearing in the skies, basically fixing the ionosphere. And that during that process, we would be seeing them. And that there was no way to avoid this. And I wondered if this, when this came up, this story about these craft, I wonder if there wasn't some preemptive thing involved saying that, you know, soon people will be seeing these craft in the sky repairing the ionosphere, so we might as well give them some story about a threat out there. What do you think of that? I mean, I know there's no easy answer on that, and not to put you on the spot.
No, I think so. That's definitely something that I think I wouldn't put it past them to do. I think that you did something on the space fence.
Yes.
And there's also something with this where there's a quarantine and that whole thing. Right. And so it is interesting that if something was broken in that arena, that maybe there would be really unusual repair technology that would need to be used to keep that going. And maybe they were preparing people for that. Mm. It's really interesting. I'd like to see the crash to see if it was ours or theirs, but.
Right. Absolutely. It is interesting. And I think that when we look at it, when we see the deep operators and the CIA coming in to just take over this thing, I mean, it's the most blatant takeover of a disclosure narrative I've ever seen in my life by the CIA. They usually lay back. I mean, this is actually quite shocking. They're famous for, WMDs in Iraq and, you know, hey, it's going to be a slam dunk. You'll find them there, you know. They're not usually out there up front the way that this operation really required the intelligence phase. So I think it's very interesting. But we have to consider these other possibilities and some of these questions that we're bouncing around. You know, we don't need the government for that. We don't need their research for that. What we need is the good ideas on the ground. You know, is it possible with something like Fulham, for example, is it possible that there is a higher presence, you know, because I think these alien things go in waves. Of course, the UFO waves, 1975, 1997, you know, incredible things. And then long periods of quiet. That's something I don't understand very well either.
Yeah, well, there are cycles of time and space. It comes in cycles, it comes in phases, and there are times where it's more permeable. There are natural stargates that actually open. I have a video coming out about this actually tomorrow, but there are natural stargates that open and close where certain beings can come in, and a lot of ET beings just observe stuff like that. There's a lot going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably a good time to take some questions.
Have Gigi define consciousness?
Oh, is that a question?
Yeah.
Oh, there's one. Have Gigi right define consciousness?
This is like, this is like a thesis level question. Define consciousness. I would say you could look at it a couple different ways. I think consciousness can be your soul. I think consciousness could be your soul. And it's just kind of like, I kind of like the idea of consciousness that we can kind of point at places as well. It's kind of like describing like love. What is love? It's the same phenomenon. I think we can try and grasp at it, but I think it's so much bigger than what we can understand. I think consciousness can also be described as light. I think it can be felt as the spectrum we know as love. So peace, I think that that's the, actually that would hint at the quality of consciousness. Because I think consciousness can also be in alignment. And I think it can be very out of alignment. And I think there's certain laws to consciousness that correspond with universal laws and things like that. But I don't know if you could answer what is consciousness in a short question. And I think that life is about figuring out what it is to us.
Great. Olivia, you lead the way. What have you got there for questions? By the way, thank you, everyone, for checking in. And now is the good time to ask questions. And we really want to talk to you. So thank you for being here on New Year's Day.
Let's continue with Gigi. I know Gigi is big on sovereign spirituality. So how does she feel about the government trying to control everyone by hoarding this info? Doesn't that conflict with our free will?
I'm always gonna be your girl standing on the sidelines watching with a side eye. Like that's who I'll be. It does. It absolutely does. And I think, I mean, everything that you said today, Daniel, shows a very scared, sloppy operation. They're using intelligence people when they probably wanted generals. And there does show a strong element of control going on here. And I think it does interfere with the free will. And I think what we should look at it as to be like, they don't have a problem with interfering. They're not thinking that way. These are not, there are some people that just aren't going to think like you. They're not going to be worried if you've stubbed your toe today or if you're how you're feeling. There are some people that are predators. I'm sorry, but there are. And this is, we are looking at a predator type class, or this is, they're not thinking about sovereignty. They see it as, if you can beat me, good for you. They see it as a game. They see it as a predator-prey situation. But they're not thinking of a beautiful collective that can work symbiotically together like a lot of us in the New Age think. They're thinking like, I'm going to dominate you because I can. Come and get me, and if you can, you win. It is a very different mindset that we're looking at here. We're on very different foundations. DJ,
Excellent, by the way.
should you have Tom DeLonge or Elizondo on?
Listen, I'm happy to have DeLonge or Elizondo on the show. I've had little back and forths with DeLonge's PR team in the past, and that didn't go so well. But no, I'm happy to have Leslie Kane, DeLonge, Elizondo, or George Knapp on the show. I don't think other CIA people on that team would really. I mean, it would be a whole show of me asking them questions and them deflecting. But I would certainly talk to DeLonge about it. It's not, I mean, and the thing is, I do want to say this for people who are into the idea of DeLonge bringing this forward. And they'll say, like, well, nothing else has worked in 70 years. We should try this. What's wrong with that? I mean, I've been studying the UFO thing for decades myself. And I understand all of that very well. But we need real disclosure. We don't need marketing ops. We don't need galactic ambassadors. We don't need people making predictions about cabal arrests that never happen. That's just a waste of time. We don't need a CIA team like the one I laid out here running the UFO field. We don't need them funneling money into an organization and that organization turning around and trying to buy out researchers or at least restrict them and some of the best. So, if anything, that harvests the field, it harvests the people involved, and we don't wind up with anything. So, instead of having this fantasy of disclosure coming forward, I prefer to get the real thing. We can take it. That's the way I look at it.
Who would
Yeah,
you?
I have to say, to the person who suggested that these individuals come on and talk to dark journalists, please, why are we not having an open dialogue about this? Why are there only softball interviews, strange softball interviews? Why is that happening? Like, why can't we go head to head and get the best? Like, why not?
Absolutely.
And I
Absolutely.
also have a problem not only with these softball interviews and people not coming on and wanting, why don't you want to talk about this stuff? Like, why don't we want to collaborate? Why? That's very weird. I also have an issue with these things when, why aren't they talking about meditation? Meditation and this kind of stuff is synonymous. It's synonymous with ET tech, and it's synonymous with this whole thing. Anybody who does not tell you to meditate and to heal yourself and all that kind of stuff that's talking about disclosure, I have a lot of suspicion about, because meditation should be these ta the, this technique of healing and meditation should be synonymous with this topic, in my opinion.
Oh, I absolutely agree. It's more like, dude, you won't believe the stuff that they have hiding out in these hangars. Whoa,
Yeah, it's like you can't use a lot of the advanced ET tech unless you're in a certain state. It's just everything leads to that. And I know for some people, they're like, quiet New Age girl on the show, you don't know. But you'll see that it's all consciousness, and woo-woo and ufology will eventually unite.
Well, it's amazing. This is what I call Gigi disclosure. She's laying it out right there. Okay, keep
Okay,
rolling.
who would you trust with honest disclosure?
Well, it's pretty interesting because I've worked closely with the people I would trust. And so that would be Joseph Farrell, Gigi Young. Catherine Austin Fitz, the former HUD secretary, has done more for the UFO field, which is she's not in, than all of the researchers in the UFO field have done in the last decade. You know, talk about the money and the missing money and how it relates to the UFO program and how they're using things like the New York Times article to try to hide, to create this threat thing to then, if they need it, use it as a jump out and say, well, the $20 trillion was missing, but let me tell you, we had something very secret going on. You know, we had to have this going on. And Tom DeLonge told you, man, he went in there and they checked out his eyes. They had to like go through this process. Dude, it was awesome, you know. And, you know, the coast to coast guys reading it say, I have a special message from Tom DeLonge. And he says, wow, boy, are we going to have disclosure. Yeah. I mean, that's not, you know, that's entertainment. It's got nothing to do with journalism. I, you know, I'm sorry. I come out of journalism and this stuff looks ridiculous to me. The worst part of it is the really good people, you know, if, you know, they're getting into these contractual relationships with Academy of the Stars, they're journalists. I mean, they have to know that you have to put that in parentheses before your article. Full disclosure, I have a contractual relationship with Tom DeLonge and Academy of the Stars, but I'm writing you this article anyway. You know, so I think the first thing to clean the slate for 2018, my hero there, George Knapp, Leslie Kane, you know, these are people that should come forward and just say if they have a contractual relationship. There's nothing wrong with it, but we need to, that's full disclosure. And we'll know to understand if the spin coming out of Bigelow, Reed, DeLonge, that operation, the UFO operation that stumbled into the New York Times, that the deep state tried to use for their own bit, that John Podesta was involved in, that Hillary Clinton thought she was going to come in and she learned UAP and she's complaining to people about it. Hey, you know, I was there. Why didn't the host ask me about UFOs? Let's ask ourselves why she was doing that. They had this plan last year. They thought Hillary was going to get in. They were going to release this. Instead, they got Trump. What did Trump do when this stuff came out? Trump ordered a DOD audit. He wants control of it. He reactivated the Space Council. He said, we're going back to the moon. Everyone in that structure knows that in that space economy, there's huge expanse. In that space knowledge, there's expanse. In that deep exotic technology, there's real power, but it's not easy to get at it. And they are two different factions trying to get at it. So the Trump response, Space Council, we're going back to the moon, that's one. The Clinton deal, well, she didn't get in, but she had the plan laid out. Podesta, DeLonge, you know, it was going to be millennial cool to talk about UFOs. And she was going to come out and say, it's UAPs, and I'm defending you against them. So, you know, we have to understand, we have to go much deeper than the level that we've been given, and we have to get over the entertainment side of it. I mean, entertainment's cool, but don't take it seriously. You know, the UFOs are real. And that's something I think to build in. But, you know, I don't think the X-Files is a real scenario. You know, I understand it's a show. So DeLonge's thing is a show. It's a CIA show.
This is important. Dude, maybe you won't like how disclosure will come about. But if the government is admitting that they are interested in researching UFOs, then let it go.
Dude, they admitted that in 1947. And dude, by the way, they had tons of programs that were infiltrated by the CIA. And what did they say, dude, when it was over? Project Blue Book. There's UFOs. We couldn't figure out anything about it, but whatever they are, they don't pose a threat. So that's old news. What have you got since 1969? Oh my God, Tom DeLonge. Do you know what he said? He said that they're actually researching UFOs at a government level. I mean, come on, it's ridiculous. They've done that for years. Now, it is interesting because they don't talk about the programs that they have. But the idea that they are starting and creating this artificial line in a void and saying, come on, you know, as if UFO research just started, I mean, it's ridiculous. They've had panels on it. Gerald Ford called for congressional hearings on it in the 60s. We had J. Allen Hynek. We had Close Encounters of the Third Kind that came out of Hynek's research. You know, we had the Phoenix Lights. I mean, we've had 70 years of this. And for the CIA to think that they could get a marketing op together with their intel op and make it into a big disinformation sandwich is ridiculous.
Ready?
Okay. Thank you, dude, for the question.
To Gigi, how does this affect the upcoming time split we're about to experience as a collective third density / fifth density?
I think we're constantly splitting times. And I think we're constantly going on to new timelines, and I think we're constantly shifting density. And I think it's probably a little bit healthier to look at it as something that we're constantly doing. We're constantly oscillating through different levels of reality, rather than looking at it as something external and how, like, this one big event that's going to happen. I've been seeing an issue actually in the new age and around where we're constantly waiting for this big event. We're constantly waiting for this big shift into 5D. We're constantly waiting for this big disclosure. And I think that it doesn't necessarily serve us to put our attention to that and to look at it as so outside of ourselves. I would just be in the present moment as you are, in your heart, living your life in a good way, and everything will roll out in a way where you can handle it. I think we need to not, and I think what the whole conversation's about is, let's not look to the external so much. Let's go inward. Let's use this time to go inward, and then we can discern whether people are authentic and if they're not, or whether the information is for ourselves, and we'll respond the way we should. Because if we're panicking or we're too externally focused, we're not going to get the intuitive insight to make the right decisions in situations where we need that kind of focus.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. What else you got?
Okay. This is really important. What is Dark Journalist's idea of full disclosure? What would that look like?
Well, that's a great question. Who asked that?
Justin Thomas.
Well, Justin, first of all, it would be the acknowledgement that we've had UFO research programs ongoing over 75 years, that there have been crash retrievals from those programs, and that we've tried to reverse engineer the technology, and that it's been all been kept under a wall of secrecy. Now, I don't know if they're working, you know, there are this great literature in the UFO field about them working with aliens, you know, J-Rod and all these people at Area 51, giving them high fives, working on the technology with them. I don't know if that's true. So that part I couldn't say. You have to disclose you're working with aliens. I don't know if they are. But I do know that they've kept the UFO file secret for 75 years, and the full disclosure of that secret would be the money and the researchers involved over that 75-year period that the American people have paid for. What else you got? Thank you for the question.
Would you address the whistleblower issue? People who will break their security oaths?
Well, this is very interesting because, you know, I talked about this. I think this has to be a big piece of it. And thank you, Olivia, for pointing that out. There are people in that national security state who need the ability, the clemency to come out and say, I was a part of this program, the way Luis Elizondo is pretending to. And they don't have the ability for the intelligence agencies to prosecute them. Now, there are secrecy issues involved. But I think on certain cases, in other words, if somebody came out and said, this is what we did, and it was in the 1980s and all the rest of it, and we knew it, there was a cutoff point where it couldn't affect national security now, then those people should be allowed to come forward without facing any penalty. I think people in the program now should have the ability, if they do come forward, because there's a way even for them to come forward and say, I've been working on this, without revealing the details on the national security side. So there needs to be a program for that. And I don't think that that's something that we have in place or gets considered very much. All you have is people in charge of secrecy on one hand, and the public on the other hand that's curious. And then people controlling and using rules of secrecy and saying, well, that's national security, you can't look at it, sorry. And destroying the democracy and destroying the republic by saying, you can't look at it, it's secret because I'm protecting you. That's not how it works, because we hire the government, we hire these officials. There's a certain level of secrecy, but I think with the researchers and the expertise that we have on our side in this field, and I can cite, you know, scholars and professors and everything else, I think we could work something out where we get the information we need. That's the foundation of journalism. And, you know, so this is really what it comes down to. But it's absolutely essential to point out that if somebody comes forward and they get ganged up on by the intelligence agencies and they get sent to a military gulag for 25 years, yeah, they're not going to say anything. So we need rules in place where they can do that. Excellent
How do we get those rules?
Well, I would say the way to get them is by getting greater transparency from the government on the issue and by having an aroused public understand that they've been played on the issues, and to have a movement come forward that says, look, you know, we've been harvested on this on one side by the intelligence side and on the marketing side. We'd like a clear line to truth. And the first way we would do that is by saying, you know, this happens, by the way, when they roll companies like Enron and stuff. They say, look, you come out and tell us the stuff, and then, you know, we'll go easy on you. Instead of getting 25 years for ripping people off, you'll get 5. And they make deals like that. Well, those are legal deals. We could put something like that in place. I think it's absolutely crucial.
But we, as a UFO community, what can we do to bring that about?
Well, I think the UFO community itself as a whole has grown over time. But the problem is that it's kind of like we're easy to be played with entertainment. And so we'll never get anywhere as long as there are entertainment ops going. If there are galactic ambassadors dancing, you know, and going to Mars every night and coming back and saying, like, here's my download from Mars. You know, the way that I look at it, while those things are going on, we'll never be able to harness enough energy to get this done. So the first thing would be, I would say, for a group like the UFO community, which is looking for the truth, to not fall for CIA fairy tales and to really understand that the disclosure they can get actionable intelligence on the ground, and they can get to the truth of this reality. They don't need the gimmicks and they don't need the show. What they need is to be able to not be harnessed by intelligence agencies that are doing psyops or marketing groups that are trying to steal their money.
Okay.
Thank you.
Frank Cook says, there should be congressional hearings on the Bigelow Materials revelations.
Yeah, well, they mentioned, what do you think of that, Gigi? You take that one.
Yeah, I'm all for more transparency. This stuff has been locked away and Bigelow's hangers and, you know, hidden. I think there definitely should be, people should be poking around for sure. Not just about him, but other people, people behind him. I think that it's going to come forward anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. I don't think that they can keep it under wraps anymore. I agree. I think, yeah, absolutely.
It's great. Tom DeLong mentioned in a tweet, he's like, you know, the vibe is out. Congress is going to have hearings. I don't see any indications, anything, that there's anything remotely like a congressional hearing in the future.
You know what I think is also going on is I think the big thing that is going to be disclosed is that the government has no idea what's going on. I think that's the real disclosure. I truly, truly do. I think that they try to understand, but I don't really think that they know and can grasp the ET issue. I don't think they know what's going on because it's pan-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has to do with kind of where you are in certain states of consciousness that you need to access certain levels. And that's actually, ETs can perhaps be better looked at as extra dimensionals rather than this kind of linear time space thing we're using. I think that they're struggling with this issue, and I don't think that they know nearly as much as we think they do. And I think that they would kind of be with their pants down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why there's so much fumbling and stuff, is because they really don't know as much as we think they do.
Right. So it's like they're in the loop and out of the loop at the same time.
Exactly. And that's why we see them delaying. This should have been done a long time ago. That's why we see them making these very strange decisions. Like you mentioned, the strange people being brought forward. And that's why it, if you really ground yourself and look at it, like if you really look at it, there's a lot of sloppy stuff going on. And I think it's because I think it's a bit beyond them. I think that there's times where it slips away from them and they don't know how to disclose it. And I think that's what we're really, really looking at, is I don't really think they know, not the way that they would like to. And I think that if we're kind of subconsciously even thinking like they have all the answers, I think that they have very little. And I think that that's why there's so much strangeness around it.
Absolutely.
there was a really good question a while back I can't find that was why is Putin honoring our truth embargo?
Yeah, that's an interesting question about other countries. These countries have agreements with each other. And so in order to keep one thing in place, for example, if I say to you, look, you know, we're working on this UFO thing, I'm not going to tell you about my secret program about it, but I might tell you because you know. So I can go back, for example, to Kennedy and Khrushchev. And Kennedy said, you know, what I want to do, what he told the CIA and NASA was, I want to share information about our UFO high threat cases with the Soviets, because I don't want them to mistake a UFO for a nuclear launch and us get into a Cold War heated situation. So little did he know, this is a great idea, right? But little did he know that the ripples that would set off inside that national security structure, like, oh my God, he's going to give our UFO information to the Soviets. But somebody like Putin, for example, just like China, when these things come up, they have protocols. What's fascinating is one of the things that Stan Fulham told me, it wasn't Stan Fulham, it was Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister of Canada. He said that there were deals that the defense department made that didn't include the prime minister of Canada. So they would make a deal in the defense department of Canada with the Defense Department of America. So you have the DOD in America dealing directly with their military counterparts and bypassing presidents and prime ministers completely. And, you know, this goes back to that question we were talking about earlier. When people say, well, the military answers to the president and the CIA answers to the president, ostensibly, yes. But when they run their own operations, they bring pressure to bear. And presidents very often spend most of their time trying to get that power back. You know, we saw it with Kennedy, with Reagan, you know, Clinton certainly tried it on a number of occasions as well. We've got just a few minutes left, so we'll take two more questions. And I want to thank everyone because it's great to start the new year with everybody and great to start the new year with Gigi too, because Gigi, you've been doing some outstanding work and I really appreciate it.
Cliff High is in house.
Cliff High. Okay, yeah. What do you got, Cliff?
Hi, Cliff.
Do you have any...
Does he have a question?
No, he's actually listening.
Oh, good. Cliff, if you have a question, we're all ears. Put it to you that way. What else you got? If there aren't any questions.
There's tons of questions. I just can't read them back enough.
Oh, I know.
And I screwed up. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
I can't get back there. It's done.
That's all right. What happens very often is we take the transcript and we reiterate, you know, we'll grab a question or two for the next time around, if we're lucky. I want to thank everyone. I'm going to finish off just by saying a couple of quick things. One, the New York Times piece was significant in the fact that the New York Times was talking about UFOs. If you trace where it came from and forget about this fairy tale that they told you about how it came about, then we can see it came out of the presidential election from last year. And it came out of this Podesta, DeLong, Clinton thing. That's where the original story came from. And the New York Times is certainly geared up to help Hillary Clinton. So I do think it was significant in that sense that the New York Times was talking about UFOs, because now a lot of people out there who will see a story in the New York Times about UFOs and then you and I talk about UFOs, they'll be like, oh, wow, well, the New York Times was talking about that too, you know. So it is an interesting difference, I would say. But nonetheless, everything that they talk about, that being disclosure or acknowledgement or anything like that, is a complete farce. It was a CIA operation, and now we're looking at that kind of, you know, interwar between those departments fighting it out. The Pentagon, this is on the record, okay? And let's start with this. Pentagon says that the film isn't theirs, number one. That's on the record. Our friend Ron Pendolfi, who's the top scientist for the CIA, says that the New York Times got punked by Scientologists, hell put off, okay? WikiLeaks, of course, came out and said something very similar. So the whole thing has, you know, the idea that DeLong was going to come forward with disclosure and then he had trouble and then they switched to Harry Reid, I think, is significant. And when you saw Reid come forward, they thought that was going to save the day. But obviously with Pendolfi getting out of there and General McCaskill getting out of there, then we can see that part of this team is like, this is not what we signed up for. And so the CIA op is exposed in that sense. And I think DeLong's operation is in big question, because now it looks like, you know, DeLong and Bigelow and Harry Reid, and then you have good UFO researchers getting caught up in that spin cycle from those people. And so, like Leslie Kane and George Knapp, I think they have to look at those people and what they're trying to drag them into. I think it's significant. And I think we've pointed a lot of that out today, and I'm glad that we brought this forward. I also think that in the second article that Ralph Blumenthal wrote regarding this, he mentions there was a defense contractor present. I think, in full disclosure, he should say who the defense contractor was, because in my opinion, that's where we're going to find the tape came from. So that's what I'd like to say about all that. The aspects that Gigi brought into this, I think, were absolutely fascinating. And that thing about Slave being there as messaging is very important, but also that they don't know what to do, you know, in the sense, because they don't have the consciousness to handle the UFO issue, I think is very significant, which is why I think their next move with the documentary and all that is a CIA documentary. So, but you guys were great to be here with me. Next week, we're going to go and follow this up a little bit more, and I'm going to have more to say about it. So please stick with us. It's darkjournalist.com is where you can sign up for the newsletter and keep in touch with us, you know, so we can tell you when the shows are coming up and all the rest of it. It is a new year, and we want to work closely with you. And, you know, the live shows have been great because we've got to interact with you much better and get to hear the questions that you have. Gigi Young, you have to go to gigiyoung.com because Gigi is doing outstanding cutting-edge content. Her YouTube channel, I can't believe that the stuff is available and out there for free. I mean, this is very high-level stuff, and she's a fascinating thinker. And Gigi, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, and thank you, everybody, for watching.
Excellent. Have a great New Year's Day. I couldn't think of a better way to spend it. Olivia, you did an outstanding job. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivia.
Thank you.
And you can look quickly on that board to see if Cliff High ever responded. Go ahead.
I can't. I closed the window by accident.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Well, it's, you know, it's not that hard to reopen. Thanks, everyone. And have a great New Year's. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Okay, that's the end.